Yeah. Now you guys certainly inspired so many of the players who came behind you, and the legendary we'll get to this later. We always joke about 73 versus 83, but you guys laid the foundation. Skip, Tim talked about some of the guys before him, but give us some names on guys who were older that kind of influenced you in the game of basketball.
Well, you know, basically it's almost the same as what Tim was saying. You had Dickie Kellys, you had Mo Joes, you had Chico Damon, you had a lot of these guys that came out, Herb Trusty, that came out of East Baltimore rec centers that, you know, I used to sit on the sideline and emulate and watch, you know what I mean? And these was all good scorers. And I was always interested in the people that could shoot the ball.
hey, Tim, I can see you saying that's right, because look, prior to the show, Tim, share with our listeners what you told me and Skip about him shooting and you rebounding.
Well, I told Coach and Dip, I said if him and Duke, and I want to say this, and Billy had his shot too, Billy Snowden, you know, my other crime and partner. If I didn't get a rebound, they got a rebound. But with them shooting three-pointers in our day, in our time, I would have had more rebounds to my stats. Plain and simple.
No
Plain
question.
And simple. There wasn't a lot of misses either, Coach. So,
no.
You know.
Listen, I watched the game. That famous game, or from D.C.'s perspective, or DeMatha specifically, that infamous game where I don't think Skip missed a shot in the entire second half. But, Skip, I got to ask the question, who was the person and when did it happen when they labeled you Honey Dip? Because that's one of the, no pun intended, one of the sweetest basketball nicknames of all time, Skip Honey Dip. Who was the first to put that tag on you?
It was a little guy that grew up in Douglas Projects named Meatball. You know, when we used to go to this movie called The Apollo, and we used to go past the Virginia Donut Bakery and get donuts. And with me eating a lot of donuts and then playing ball the way I did, he kicked me that nickname.
Wow. No question about that. Yeah.
Tell them how much the donuts was, Skip. Tell them how much the bag of donuts was.
15 cents a bag.
Wow. Yeah. Boy, I tell you, I knew this was going to be special. In the coach's corner, we have two of the finest to play the high school game from Baltimore, Tim Green and Skip Honey Dip Wise. Guys, talk about how back in the day when I was coming up, when you were coming up before us, the place where you really improved your game, the laboratory, so to speak, were the playgrounds. Talk about playing playground basketball and tell us where were your playgrounds of choice over in East Baltimore. We'll start with you, Tim.
Well, I started out down Luzerne Playground up on the hill. We had a hill, a little hill up there, and I started watching my oldest brother, Reggie Green, my next brother, Charles, and then the Hansy Moores, the Dick Kellys, the Herb Dickies, and the Slim Bennies, Lil Box, all them guys, Box Owens. I watched all them guys, and they was like, you know, my big brothers as well as having three big brothers. And then they ventured down to a place called Bocek, up to 85, and then from 85 down to Madison. And then I finally found a real home down there with dipping them down Lafayette Projects, better known as L.A. And that was the best move I could have made and should have made before I played down at Madison. So, you know, to play with them guys, I couldn't beat them, Coach, so I had to join them, you know. And, you know, They were, and we still today, we all brothers, you know, we call check on one another, and you know, try to stay together much as we can, you know.
Yeah, and talk about your origin of playing basketball in terms of the playground, Skip.
Yeah, well, I basically started at a one-goal gym at McKim's, then worked my way up to Lafayette Recreation Center, who had one goal starting off, Mr. Howard did. Mm-hmm. Then went to Madison Square, played at Madison Square, then Chick Webb, and out Hearn Run. Played in the league out Hearn Run. That's where I was really proud to play for the Rockets, because that's the first team that gave us a complete uniform and a jersey and a warm-up set. That's the first time we had played. We was playing in baseball jerseys at one time, you know. So at 14, that was the first time I had a chance to get a full uniform, and I was real proud of that thing. I used to wash it, hand wash it and everything else, you know, because I was really proud to have a full uniform with the socks and everything. Yeah.
You know, every city, every area has godfathers in terms of sports, and not just the high school coaches, but the people who get the players, the athletes from the very beginning. And the name that I hear in East Baltimore quite frequently, and I had a chance to meet him and interview him, was Mr. Leon Howard. From your perspective, first, Skip, talk about Coach Leon Howard and what he meant to you.
Oh, man. Mr. Howard was a blessing. You know what I mean? He graduated from J.C. Smith, and boy, by stroke of luck, he wound up being a rec manager and a friend, a father, and everything else to me. At the team, basically, you know, by coming to Lafayette as a rec coach, you know what I mean? He was one of the most special people that I've ever met, you know. And I really have true love for this man.
Fantastic.
He's
and
a
you,
blessing.
Tim? You, Tim Green?
Yes.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Leon Howard.
I got to echo right back and piggyback on what he said. You know, second father to me. And, man, you know, like I said, I couldn't beat them guys. And then he asked Duke Richardson, well, I was playing. Duke said no. He said, go get him. That was, the best move that I could have and should have made a year before, because I couldn't beat them guys, man. And Mr. Howard, even till the day, we talk on a regular. He called me, called all of us to check on us, because what he has done, and hopefully we can get him another honor while he's still standing tall. Because he deserves another honor to let people know down there on Asquith Street should be renamed after him, because he made Lafayette what it was. And people, when you think about Lafayette, you think about Mr. Leon Howard.
No question about it.
Yes.
Yeah. And guys, we talk about legendary coaches, and none greater, none more legendary than the next name I'm going to throw up. And, of course, you know, Tim, when we get in those friendly debates, as we do, you talk about East Side, West Side, and then Baltimore and D.C., and you know what my go-to line is always. You know, when y'all say, well, yeah, man, we got you this year, we got you that year, but you know what my go-to line is? Sugar Cade is from D.C. He had to come over to Baltimore to teach you the game. But,
yes, sir.
But in all seriousness, guys, talk about the great Sugar Cade as a coach and as a man. Start with you, Skip.
Well, Mr. Cade was something of pride and respect. He had been coaching at Dunbar so long and being a winner that he could walk in any gym and hold his head high. And playing for him was an honor. because of all the accolades that he had received beforehand, before I had got there. And this man inspired his team. He really inspired his team. He couldn't see without a one eye, and this man inspired his players to be great. Not just good, great. This is what he wanted for his teams.
Wow. Tim Green.
Yeah. Mr. King, hey, man, he gave one emotional speech that I truly take to my grave with. We were playing Baltimore City College, and Ron Smith and Pat McKinley was doing work. And Skip will tell you, it was so emotional that he made this speech that if he was playing today, he'll have one in his hand and the other one in his back pocket. And for me, that inspired me to go out there and say, shit, I ain't letting this happen on my watch. And if Coach Kane was that emotional about it, we all should be emotional about it, because we had a knack that year, Coach. We would get up on these teams, and we let them back in the game. And that, I guess, pushed them over the edge. And Skip will tell you, whenever you knew he was mad, he'll start stuttering. And once he starts stuttering, you was in trouble. You know, he had no problem. I mean, I didn't get it, and I know Dick never got it, but I know there was times that my older brothers would even tell me. He would call, you know, guys, he got really mad and upset with big dummies, you know. And if a Billy Snowden listened, Billy tell you, he'll use that term as well, you know. But far as his knowledge of the game, I wish I would have caught him on his earlier years. You know, yes. I caught him on the back end.
Sure.
You know, and my brother told me, he said that they played Carver. They was beating Carver. Carver came back and beat them 53-50. Coach made them run 50 laps the next day of practice. That's the amount of points the Dunbar scored was 50. Huh. And my oldest brother Reggie tell me that story all the time. He said, yeah. He said, you know, y'all want, you know, play around, let these guys come back in the game and then beat you. He made them run 50 laps. See, we didn't get none of that. And I think had we would have gotten some of his earlier years, no telling how dominant Dunbar would have even been when the years that we didn't win the MSA championships.
Wow, wow. Skip, your story, if you have one, of Coach Kane.
Oh, you know, it was the halftime of the DeMatha game.
Okay.
You know, because if all the hype that was going on about the game and them talking about beating us by 30 and so on and so on, I think it had Mr. Kane a little intimidated to a degree, because at halftime, when he came in the locker room at halftime of the DeMatha game, it was a tied score, like 26-26, something like that. And, man, he paced up and down the Civic Center locker room, then took his hat off and turned around and yelled out, boy, we can beat these guys. We can beat these guys. Man, everybody in there, face lit up. Face lit up. He lit us up. When we came out there, we were so pumped. Well, it showed in the score, because we were so pumped up about the fact that he had got so emotional and so engrossed in that.
Right, right.
Because it let us know that, hey, we weren't that great until we played the math. If we would have won, if we wouldn't have won, we wouldn't have never had the opportunity of proving how good we really were.
That's right. That's a great point.
Yeah, and he was motivated at halftime. I think he was just going through the motions the first half. And when he seen that we could be competitive against a nationally ranked team, Then he got motivated and pumped up. He said, man, we can beat these guys. We can beat these guys.
Yeah.
And boy, and the rest is history.
Folks, I tell you, this was going to be special. In the Coach's Corner, we have Alan, Skip, Honey Dip, Wise, and Tim Green. And guys, you know, Tim and I often talk about the game, and I equate it to the little bighorn in General Custer. He had no idea what he was getting into when he rolled down into that little bighorn valley. And it's the same thing.
Yeah.
I don't and Adrian and Kenny Roy and Kenny Carr, they had no idea what they were facing. I mean, they had said, and you know, Tim Green, you've heard the interviews that I've had with Adrian, and he said that they didn't know much about you guys, but you guys knew a lot about them. Talk about, Tim, the practice, because I had never seen a defensive scheme ever then and now to hold Adrian down. You're talking about a guy who led the NBA in scoring twice.
Yeah.
Talk about
it, Tim. Coach, our practices was really our toughest games. A lot of times we gave Skip and them hell. You know, they would give us hell. That's how spirited it was. And that carried on over into our games. And with we heard about DeMatha. We read about DeMatha. And one thing that, you know, Coach Kane, he didn't have to tell us guys down the bottom. He didn't have to tell the guys up front. Adrian, as good as he was, we weren't going to let him beat us. There was no way. Wherever he go, Larry in the back, Billy, Donnie, Petey, myself, we in front of him. He wasn't going to beat us. Now, if we'd have lost, he wasn't going to be the one that caused us to lose. And for us, it was just packing in, hands up, turn, box out, get the ball, let's go. That was our offense. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know, and then Skip and Duke, the silent assassin. I keep saying Charles Duke Richardson was a silent assassin.
Yeah.
Man, them two guys, I wish there was a tape, and that's why these guys today don't know the history, because we didn't have film like that. Mm-hmm. And if we would have had film so that they could see, this is where, you know, we started something.
Mm-hmm.
We started something that'll never be equal. We'll go down in history. They could talk about all the rest of great Dunbar teams, but we started something for white and black, girls and boys. And I'm proud to be a part of that history.
No question. And whether it's accurate or not, and I never bought it in terms of Baltimore, because you've always had great players, but the truth of the matter is that game, as Skip alluded to, made people know what the people inside of Baltimore, what the Cleve Bristers and the Leonard Hams and the Clayton Tuckers and the Bob Wades, on and on and on, the people who follow the game knew the greatness of Baltimore basketball, but the rest of the country didn't. That game put the city on the map. Skip, we talk about shooters getting in a zone. Okay, and all great shooters get into a zone where they can't miss. For our listeners, put our listeners in your head. In that second half, you talked about the emotional speech that Coach Kane gave. But, man, you came out and you were in a zone. You couldn't miss. Talk to us about that.
Man, listen, let me say this. I can't even remember what went on. That's how pumped up I was.
Wow.
I can't remember the shots, where they were or whatever. That's how motivated and pumped up I was about that speech Mr. Cain gave, and when we stepped back on the court, man, we was walking on air. We was walking on air, and I really did not remember until the game was over and the people ran on the court and we couldn't get off the court because it was so crowded. They wouldn't let us off the court. That's when I realized that, boy, it was all over but the show.
Wow. And we often talk about, at least I do, if there had been, I think, what was the final numbers? I think it was it 41?
80-something.
No. Your numbers.
Oh, I think 41.
You had 41. Now, this is what I say, Skip and Tim. And I know you guys are humble, but let's be real now. If that game had happened today, meaning having the three-point arc, that 41 easily could have been, what, about 55, 60 maybe, Skip? Because you were shooting them from the popcorn stand, man.
Yeah. You know, like I said, see, that's one thing that I always practice, shooting deep. I always practice shooting deep. I love the jump shot. You know what I mean? I could penetrate, but I love the jump shot. I love the maneuver, run off a pick, shoot straight up. I just, you know, the shot, I loved it. I love the jump shot. I love Michael Jordan's jump shot.
You know, remind me, Skip, you remind me of a guy. I don't know whether you watched him play. I went to high school with. He was a few years ahead of me. But your game, you had a little more razzle-dazzle, but in terms of efficiency and productivity, the one player, Tim and Skip and listeners, that I would look at Skip and say he reminds me a little bit of this guy was a guy named Austin Carr. And I don't know whether remember Austin Carr.
Oh, yeah, Notre Dame.
Yeah,
Notre Dame.
But Skip, your game was like Austin's in terms of you didn't do a lot of this crossover, back and forth stuff. As you stated, you use your screens. You were ready to catch and shoot. Now, having said that, two questions. You talked about practice. Now, I do believe parents would ask me, Coach McAdams, can you make my son a good shooter? And I would say, no, I can show your son how to shoot the ball, but whether or not he's a great shooter is up to him. A lot of
stay
shooters,
in mind.
Right.
Stay in
a lot
mind.
Of shooting is God-given, but also the other part, Skip, is repetition and work. Talk about how you went into the gym and how many shots would you put up by yourself?
Oh, man. Man, look, Mr. Cain, Mr. Howard, Lafayette, Mr. Cain at Dunbar, they used to have to put me out of the gym because that's what I did. I worked on my shot constantly. And if it was a big game coming up, oh, I stayed around the gym, boy, for 2-3 hours. You know what I mean? After practice, you know, I would play anybody one-on-one. You know what I mean? Two-on-one. I would play guys two-on-one.
Wow.
I would just match up. That's how I would play, you know what I mean? Because I always thought about being double-teamed anyway. Mm-hmm. So I would use two guys, play against two guys against me. You know, and I would just practice shooting over top of, going around, tricking them, whatever.
And then let's talk about how you had that rare form at 6'2", 6'3". You were a big guard at that time. And not just 6'3", with great hand-eye coordination, but you shot the ball behind your head that made it equally tough to defend. How did you develop that style of shot?
That came from, you know what I mean, me wanting to play, wanting to shoot the ball deep. Because when I was young, I didn't have the strength to shoot straight up, facing. So what I did was I started putting the ball behind my head and shooting, and it gave me more strength and more ability and agility with my shot. So I practiced that constantly, you know, and it just came about. It just developed because I was just using that to actually get the ball to the rim from a deep shot.
And Tim Green.
And Coach, you couldn't block it either, Coach. You couldn't block that shot either.
No. And Tim, talk about your mindset, because I always will say, you give me 5 Tim Greens and I'll play anybody, because you adjusted your game. And I have a lot of respect for players like Earl Monroe, for example. When Earl was with the Bullets, you guys saw him as youngsters. He could score with anybody. But when he went to New York, he looked around and said, what does this team need me to do? They don't need any more scoring. They got plenty of scoring. They need me to do something else. Did you have that same mindset playing with Skip and Duke and Snowden and Larry Gibson?
Oh, yeah. You know, it was something that I was going to do that anyway. Rebound, block a shot. You know, anybody can score. Anybody that put a ball in their hand can score, or anybody. But how many people going to rebound? How many people going to block shots? How many people going to sacrifice their body? You know, I know a lot of guys don't like that physical stuff. So watching that as a youngster, going down to Civic Center, watching, you know, all of the games down there when the Bullets was here, and then just getting out there and applying it, because I had to come up the ranks the hard way, man. I had to come up through Fresh Soft, JV, which I was the man on both teams. But I come up to varsity, I got Larry, Skip, Duke, Donnie, Billy, Petey. So I said, somebody got to do something, and whatever I get, that's a bonus, you know. I don't even have to touch it long as my man don't score, and long as I can get a rebound, I'm helping my team out the best way I can. Setting a good screen, bring him to me. He ain't going to come through that no more, because when I set the pick, I'm going to give him a good one. You know, that's a little thing that a lot of guys don't even understand. That's why today I rarely even look at basketball, because it's like entertainment, you know. Got 7-footers shooting 35-footers, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to play the game.
Yeah, I
so it was easy for me, Coach. It was real easy, you know, real easy.
This is special. I tell you, it'd be a good one. In the coach's corner, we got Skip Wise and Tim Green, Baltimore's finest. And, guys, Red Auerbach, the great legendary Boston Celtic coach and general manager, once said that talent gets you to the top, but character keeps you there. So now you get on the national stage. You defeat the Matha. What was it like after that? What was the mindset then, Skip?
Well, basically, the next year, we didn't get to enjoy it too much because the school system went on strike. Yeah, but we only played 12 games. But the mindset was that we were good, and that anybody we played against, we were going to be competitive and good. Now, one thing I want to reiterate on is that Timmy probably forgot was that we met Avon Dantley and them in Boston.
Right.
We met them. We didn't play against them, but we met them up there. They played. They saw us play, and we saw them play. And then, you know, it went from there. Then they came to Baltimore over at Morgan. And
I was there.
And them play. Right. And they.
Hey, wait a minute, Dick. You got one more, Dick. Remember we went down Cold Field House? But Dantley, I don't think AD played that game. We played them now, Cold Field House.
Right. You remember that? Right. There was a big light-skinned guy that went to Woodson. Yeah, but no, Aiden didn't play. But but most of the guys that was on that team at the BNBL championship up in Boston played down at Cold Field House. So we had met Adrian and saw him play, and he had a wind of us. But that was just something I wanted to touch on.
Yeah. And then go ahead, Tim. Excuse me.
Hey, Coach, I'm going to finish that part about Boston, in which I'm so proud. We only had seven guys. One of our guys off the bench was Muggsy Height, Lil Marvin. We lost to Detroit with Tom Lagarde, Bubble Hawkins, Cornell Norman, Bob Elliott, all them guys. We lost to them by 9 points. I hate to say it, they blew D.C. out by over 20. And Larry Gibson was our tallest guy at 6'7". Okay? So, again, that's national stage, but you still don't get that notoriety because back then, you know, scouts, they knew about Skip and Larry, you know, what's his name, Garfinkel, Uncle, whatever his name was.
Yeah.
So, you know, it set the stage for us when we come back to Baltimore that, you know, man, we play on a national stage against these guys that, you know, all Americans, and because a lot of them went to the pros and held our own and didn't have an all-star team.
Right.
We didn't have an all-star team.
With the first team we played against up there was Buffalo, and they had Chris Patton as three other All-Americans on that team.
Right.
Wow.
And we blew them out, Coach.
And we blew them out.
Wow, yeah.
Blew them out.
Yeah. Yeah, and
again,
Skip,
you know.
Go ahead, Tim.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Tim.
No, go ahead, Coach.
Okay,
no. I'm good.
Okay, what I wanted to let the listeners know, and you aware of this, and I'm definitely Skip, but the amazing thing was, Skip, you had an accident. I guess you were, what, cutting grass, and a part of your big toe came off? But
yeah,
man,
I was working for Gas and Electric.
Right. But you didn't miss a beat, man. Talk to our listeners who may not be aware of this. Man, you lost a part of your big toe, but, man, you played like it was nothing.
Well, believe it or not, when I injured my toe, it was on the back of a BG&E truck. I was working that summer because I was working. The school got me a job, so I was working on this truck, and the lift pulled up, and it smashed my toe. And what happened was, all that summer, that was when Adrian and him came to Morgan and played against Tim and them and beat him.
Beat him.
And I was like, real hurt, boy. But anyway, I was on crutches then. And, man, I started going outside on crutches, sneaking out the house. My mother wouldn't even know. I was sneaking out of the house with a ball, shooting on crutches, and my foot would even start bleeding. That's how bad I wanted to play, you know, get back into the game. Because I was more concerned when the doctor was operating on me. All I kept saying was, "Doc, will I be able to ever play ball again? Let me know now. Will I ever be able to play ball again?" And he said, "Son, I'm doing everything I can." He was a doctor at University of Maryland Hospital. He was alumni of University of Maryland. And he said, "Man, I'm going to do everything I can." And, you know, and believe it or not, all that summer, I went to the YMCA. I lift leg weights. I did everything I could so I would be ready for the next year. You know, and basically, I got there.
Did you have to make an adjustment in terms of how you ran or your quickness? Because, as I stated, from the naked eye, from the fans, I mean, there was no difference. But from your personal perspective, did you have to make an adjustment in terms of how you moved?
Well, basically, from my left, when I would take people to the hoop with my left, I would have to push deeper from my angle going to my left with my left foot. I would have to push deeper and harder. And basically that was it. It only happened when I drove. You know, it was only something when I drove to the hoop from the left side. But basically, other than that, it wasn't no problem.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about...
He still had the 40,
Yeah. So now you put Baltimore City basketball on the map. You're number one in the state, probably number one in the country. And so that leads to, for you, Tim, you were a senior, Skip's a junior, so talk about your college and where you went and what led to you selecting that next level of student athlete.
I came over your way, Coach, to the almighty Howard University.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, had a four-year scholarship, would have played for I call him great because he took advantage of what he didn't have, and that was size, Coach Emery. And teams wouldn't blow them out, you know.
Right.
And I had the utmost respect for him. What happened, that floor was like Cole Fieldhouse floor, which it had no give to it. And I don't know why I couldn't adjust to it because I played out on the asphalt, you know, the hard rock, you name it. And I couldn't even touch the rim. After running on that floor for like 2 weeks, I couldn't even touch the rim. And they had me to do the ultrasound on my knees because I had tendonitis in the seventh grade, and I couldn't touch any kind of ball, football, baseball, basketball, until my last year in junior high school. So the eighth grade year, I couldn't play no sports, couldn't take gym. And then the ninth grade, I was able to come back. And that was for my growth spurt from 5'6", going down Hampstead Hill to 5'11", and my first year down Dunbar in the 10th grade, I grew to 6'1". And when I left Dunbar, I was 6'3". But after, I couldn't play no more, man. And Skipper probably laugh and joke about it. My second true love after my mother was my oldest two kids' mother.
Sure.
And I got a little homesick, kept coming home every weekend instead of being over there with all them fine girls from Washington. And Mr. Howard, I tricked him. Well, he said I tricked him, but I don't think I did. And he still get on me about that today, as well as my oldest brother, that I told him I was getting my things to bring him back for the holiday. But little did he know I was getting the rest of my things and bring them back to Baltimore because I was transferring. Because Coach Emery told me when you come back, you got to play JV, which they had junior varsities back then.
Sure, sure.
I said, man, I went through that. I'm saying to myself, I went through that down Dunbar. I'm not going through that in college as well. And I didn't say nothing to him. I just, you know, packed my stuff. As December rolled around and people was going home for the holidays. And Mr. Howard told me, he said, I'm going to take you to Essex Community College, which one of the guys from down Lafayette with Skip and them was Tozy Johnson. But he took me out to Catonsville. And I wound up, you know, doing what I was doing all my other years before I joined up with, you know, my brothers. I made honorable mention All-American twice. And, you know, didn't have a coach to really, you know, look out for my best interest for me to finish out my last 2 years. And I know Rudy looking down and saying, yeah, you owe me one. I was supposed to went to University of Baltimore with Ronald Smith and George Pinchback and those guys. And he said, I cost them the national championship, you know, because I didn't go to summer school. So yeah, that's how my career winded up.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, Skip, your senior year, the next year, as you said, because of a teacher strike, as you alluded to, you only played like 12 games or so. But still, you were All-American, probably one of the more sought-after players. Let me ask you this question, Skip, and I don't know if anyone has ever asked you this before. And I've asked Adrian the same question. If you were playing during the time or the era where high school players had the opportunity to go straight to the NBA, would you have looked at that?
Oh, hello?
Yeah, Skip. Would you have considered, if you played during the time that players like a LeBron, like a Kobe, like a Garnett, just to name a few, who went straight from high school to the NBA, if that were prevalent during your time, during 1974, would that have been an option for Skip Wise?
Because
you had a pro game, man. You had a pro game at 18 years old.
Right, but it would have depended on where I would have went at, whether or not the team would have showed great interest in me, you know what I mean, and was willing to develop and give me the opportunity to develop. That would have been key and important to me, because stepping from high school to that pro level, it's a big difference mentally, you know, and physically, because you know, back then you had guards like Walt Frazier and Oscar Robertson that was 6'6", 6'5", and strong. And hand-checking was a deterrent then, because you could leave your hand on a player and actually guide him if he was weaker than you.
That's right.
You know,
so
that was key. I mean, those were skills and things that I picked up on watching the NBA and going to those games, how physical they were. You know, that would have been key for me.
But I bring the question up, Tim, to Skip, because he had a pro game. He had a pretty good body. Now, he was still 18. He would have to beef up a little bit. But his game was certainly conducive to the pro level, because you guys played against grown men. Skip, I remember the story where one of my mentors, God rest his soul, Will Jones, came over to you in a game and said, "Hey, young boy, I hear you good, and I hear you may get 40 tonight. But if you get 40, I'm going to get 50. And Will loved you guys, man. But I bring that story up because you were used to playing with and against grown men.
Yeah.
And that came from playing in a lot of those tournaments that they had financial gains, but high school players could play, but they couldn't get paid. Like in the Dundalk, the Hab de Grace tournament, they had guys that was playing on a total different physical and mental level. They was just semi-pro players playing in those games, and those were people that I was competing against and playing against, and I held my own, you know, and I won a lot of respect from them guys.
You hear that, Mr. Cleese? He held his own against them grown men you had against us, the ringers, Mr. Cleese.
hey, and for folks who don't know, we're talking about one of the greatest guys I know, the godfather of Baltimore, Cleve Brewster. And
that's right.
Cleve would always say, "Man, Skip's the best player I saw, but he never beat us."
I beat him in D.C.
Okay, you got it once in D.C.
We played the tournament in Washington, and we beat him. We set them home.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of that, I got a text, and from Penny Green, my man Penny Green. Penny Green said to ask him about the Tournament of Champions down at Woodson with Moses. Ask him about the 36 he gave John Lucas and Mo Howard. But, man, you talk about some great summer games. and Tim and Skip, both of you guys participated, whether it was at Woodson, the Melvin Crab House Tournament, or the Urban Coalition. But guys, talk about that, man, because that was, you know, people can talk about the Baker League and Philly and the Rucker League and New York, but in the Urban Coalition, in the 70s and 80s, none better, man, none better.
Yeah, but you know, but during the winter, they would have the Style Shot Tournament.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's where me and Moses played. That's where the guy talking about I got 36 because I had one top scorer in that Woodson game, and Moses got MVP. And we played against a James Brown, the sports commentator.
Oh, yeah.
He was playing. And what's his name went to Jacksonville. What was the guy that went to
Cricket Williams?
No, with the Florida State, and they got put on probation.
Oh, okay.
His name was Jackson. What the hell? Jackson.
Don't.
They
recall.
Played the championship. Florida State played the championship.
And he's from
the next year they got put on probation.
Okay. All right. I can't recall that one right off the top. But man, we've had some great matchups. And talk more, Timmy, you and Skip, about the coalition, just that environment in those games.
Well, Dip, I only had one instance. You got a whole lot. And this is so funny. Rodney Floyd, myself, and the two other guys, we went over to watch the games that year. And I think, Dip, didn't you play with Mike Daniels in them one year?
Yeah.
And all them guys, him, Ernie, Kevin, a lot of them wasn't even there. So they had four guys, and they was ready to forfeit. Man, Coach, I was smoked up. I'm talking about smoked up. The gym was hot. I was hot. I ain't had no socks on. And they look up in the stands and ask me, could I help them? And I say, number one, you know, you one of my enemies. You from the other side. I ain't trying to help y'all win and bunk that. But then the other part of me say, we all for one. We are Baltimore.
Okay.
I took the guy's socks off his foot, put the socks on, walk out on the floor, and lo and behold, who was standing out there? Adrian Dantley. I saw four. Now, Adrian, big and thick, I saw four of them, man. That's how tore up I was. And I had the audacity to walk over to him and say, do you remember me? I don't know why he said some dumb stuff like that. And when all of them came to the game, man, I could have kissed all of them, man. I was so glad because I was truly got embarrassed, you know, truly.
Right.
And that was
right.
Rest of the times I went to watch the game. So, Dip, you got more to talk about than what I did.
Yeah, and the player, Skip, that you were talking about was the great Harold Fox.
Harold Fox.
That's
yes.
Right.
Yes, he played in that. We played against him. He played in that Style Shot tournament. Yeah, Florida State. That was Harold Fox.
What was your biggest number? You know, we talked about the 41 that you put up against the Mather. But down in the coalition where people didn't play defense pretty much, what was your biggest number that you put up, Dip, down at the coalition?
It was probably 52, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, 52, something like that.
And we talked about, I asked you the question. We've got about 10 minutes left in the interview. I asked you the question whether or not you would have considered going to the NBA. And I think it was a legitimate question. A, as I stated earlier, you had a pro-style game. But B, looking at the transition you made from high school to the ACC Clemson, you didn't miss a beat, man. I mean, you played, you were a freshman, but you played like a senior. So that transition wasn't that big of a deal for you.
No. It wasn't. It, you know, like I said, you know, it's the state of mind. you know, when I got to Clemson, the reason why I went to Clemson is because they had the nucleus of big men. They had Tre Rawlins. They had Wayne Cross that was 6'10". They had numerous big guys. They didn't have no good guards. And that was one of the reasons why I went there. And then the coach said that I had a good chance of starting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then a lot of the players like Phil Ford and so on, me and him was going on recruiting trips together, like at Washington State, because really, to tell you the truth, if it wasn't for George Ravlin being so far away, I would have loved to have played for him. Mm. George Ravlin, that was assistant coach at Maryland,
yeah,
took the job at Washington State. I would have loved to play for him because he was my idea of a good coach, good coach that would develop talent. You know, I liked him when I went down to University of Maryland to see games. They invited me to games and stuff. And I would talk to him and Joe Harrington, and I was highly impressed with him.
Wow.
You know, I was highly impressed with him, yes.
You know, Tim talked about being somewhat homesick, and he was just 30, 40 miles away in D.C. But you leaving Baltimore, going down to South Carolina, was it, you know, we talked about how easy a transition you made on the court, but off the court, from Baltimore to South Carolina, from East Side to Clemson, did you ever get homesick, and how difficult was that transition?
Listen, my mother actually did not want me to hit that South. She did not want me to hit that South. She said, "Boy, are you crazy?" I said, "Ma, they want me. They want me. They need me. I want to go." You know what I mean? She said, "Boy, let me tell you something. You be careful down there." The thing was, when I got there, man, them people made me feel so good, so at home. I'm talking about you had people that weren't even alumni inviting me to their house for dinner and so on. I used to have to turn down engagements for dinners and going to people's houses and being invited. And I'm talking about when I first got recruited, I told the coach, I said, "No, I don't want nobody to show me around. I want to walk around by myself." Now, the town was not that big, but the people, the students, the student athletes, man, they were tight. They were tight. And they, I mean, you know, as soon as I got there, one of the football players gravitated towards me and became like a big brother. Dude named Willie Anderson, you know what I mean? He took me right in, gave me understanding about campus life and so on. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I really enjoyed the people at Clemson in South Carolina. And that's how I got motivated to play, because I wanted to win for them. Mm-hmm. And when I found out, when we beat North Carolina, that was the first time in 20 years they had beat North Carolina, and man, I was elated. Then that same year we beat Maryland. The same year I got 35 against North Carolina State, fouled David Thompson out the game for the first time he had ever been fouled out of a ACC game. Fouled him out.
Can you imagine, and folks, Skip did all this in 1 year, 19 years old probably, okay? Can you imagine if you had stayed for 3 more years and instead of being 19, now you're 22, you're a full-grown man, and good gracious, man, you may have been the number one pick overall.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But you know that Clemson, that got put on probation for 3 years. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have been able to play in any tournaments.
Yeah.
NCAA okay. or anything.
Man, you know, Tim, you've done a great job. Big props for folks who may not know outside of Baltimore. As you stated earlier, that you've been the glue, so to speak, to keep the not just the Dunbar, but the guys in the Baltimore area together with your dinners, your cookouts, et cetera. And you've been so gracious to come over and attend our cookouts. And, man, we just have a great, great time. But I love it because the respect is so mutual for D.C. guys, for you, and vice versa. When I told people that you and Skip were on, man, so many people. Well, Coach, tell them I said hello and give them my number, man. Talk about now, some 40 years later or 50 years later, but people still remember the stories and the relationships go on.
Yeah, for me, Coach, that's the one aspect about not just East Baltimore, about Dunbar High School. Dunbar High, man, I don't care where you go and wherever you are, somebody is always going to bring up, number one, that game. You know, that game is always mentioned. I don't care what conversations that you run into people you ain't seen in 30 and 40 years. Man, I was there. Boy, I wish I could see that on DVD and this, that, and the other. And see, that's the Eastside pride and that Dunbar pride, you know. And to go to another person's gym and you have just as many fans on the road watching their home team going to, as you say, with the villains, we got just as many people from Dunbar than the home team had for that team.
That's right, yeah. And
you know, you don't see that. Now, today, it's a different day and time. But back then, oh, man, it was, you know, we hollering, get your hat, your coat, and leave in the third quarter. You know, and it's still fourth quarter to go.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then other schools try to pick up on that, you know. And Skip will tell you, even up to the DeMatha game, we was joyful on the bus going down to the Civic Center. Mr. King will always leave out, and if there was lockers, we'll be beating on the lockers like drums, singing, and, you know, scoop rod, and walk side to head, and, man, it was unbelievable. As soon as Mr. King walked back in there, we was like Catholic school kids, man.
Wow.
Wouldn't say a word. We'd let him talk, but as soon as he leave, we banging, hooping, hollering, wrestling, you know, boxing one another. And we treated the DeMatha game the same way, man. And that's why I got so much love for, and I call them my 15 brothers even today. And some of them are no longer with us. May they rest in peace. But to still have that camaraderie among guys, you know, that you done fought with. And I know Dick went down Clemson. I couldn't watch his back, so I told Willie Anderson to take care of him, right? So, you know, he didn't have nobody to help him out down there. But, you know, when he went, when he won, we won. And I went down to Maryland when his mother, Miss Shirley, dear Miss Shirley, took two busloads of us down there.
Great.
And we went down there to watch him play against Maryland. Mm-hmm. And when he was, you know, to have played in the pros, I made it because I was a part of him, help him to get to that level. So
I like
made
that.
It. And
I really
couldn't wait to go down to the games to watch the games. You know, this time I ain't had to pay. But Titus Kickers, he probably would have sold me a ticket. Right?
I love it.
Yeah, man.
And Skip, so many guys, man, guys who I coached and good friends over here in the D.C. JoJo Hunter speaks highly of you. And Stacy Robinson, my man, Stacy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Stacy's a great guy. Tank out of New York and was a star
Tank
player.
Tank Bonds.
Yep. Tank Bonds, a cop, and he told me to tell you hello, and I'll get the number, his number to you guys. I mean, just, you know, Penny Green is listening. Well respected over here. All right, guys, last two questions, and this is a good one. I'll start with you, Skip. What would a older Skip Wise tell a younger Skip Wise about life and about basketball?
Well, about life, I would actually tell a younger Skip Wise to be a little bit more patient and think things a lot through. And about ball, just to hang in there and let the game come to you.
Mm. Fantastic. Timmy Green, what would a younger Tim Green hear from an older Tim Green?
Well, like I say, you got to think about the future. And I understand what Skip is saying about being patient and think things through, because if I had to do it all over again, I would have stayed over Howard. But I didn't. I was impatient. And like I said, that other part that came across me. But also, to look at some of the guys when they talk to you, look them dead in the eye and see the sincereness that they're telling you, that they don't want to see you venture down the path that they ventured into, that sometimes it don't come out good. You know, I'm lucky to say I'm still here. My situation didn't go the way that I planned, but I'm still around and still trying to inspire some younger guys to, look, this is what is going to happen when you don't pay attention to not only your mother and your father, but guys and girls that have been out here in the world with the experience, for you to understand you can slip up. Don't always cost you, but it's going to set you back. And in a way, today's time, we witnessing it as we speaking. You know, it's sad, man, because that could be any one of our loved ones, and it could be one of us under the same circumstances. Mm-hmm. So I would say, you know, just be wise, be smart, and understand you might not like what you're hearing, but in the long run, like I look up in the sky every day and tell my mom, once again, you was right, Ma. You know, I didn't want to hear it as a young guy, but now it's making sense.
Mm-hmm. Skip, looking at the game today, do you watch the games and you see a guy and you say, that guy reminds me a little bit of how I played the game?
I like Curry's game.
Mm-hmm.
I like his game, his offensive prowess, you know. But as far as reminding me, I hadn't seen too many people that played the game like I did.
Well, hey, look, and I can echo that. As I said, the one person that came to mind similar would be an Austin Carr, a guard about 6'3", that moved without the ball and could shoot the lights out. But I agree with that. Now you know I'm not gonna let either one of you leave, because you know this is always the question, Tim and Skip. A couple of
Bring
weeks
it
ago,
on.
I had Tyrone Muggsy Bogues on, and love Muggsy as we all do. And I asked Muggsy the question, who would have won 1973 Dunbar versus 1983? Now, Coach Bob Wade, he would never, being the diplomat that he is, my man, he would never answer the question. But Muggsy, Hey, Tim, you heard what Muggsy said, right? What did he say?
Yeah. I guess Ty was probably sipping on something. He made a bold statement that they would beat us 3-0. So I called Duke up. I said, Duke, guess what Ty said? He said they would beat us 3-0. And he said it would be 3-0. And Duke said, yeah, he right. We would have beat them 3-0. I said, yeah, because you'd have backed him in the hole, put him in your back pocket, make the layup, take him back out so he can dribble the ball back up the floor for that team.
Coach, we was just too
That's
big.
What he said.
We was too big.
What I tell you all the time, that we
That's
was
right.
too big. They had a hell of a team, but they couldn't beat us.
And you know, I love the pride, as I said, 40, 50 years later, still there's pride. Folks, I had Kenny Carr, who's a great friend of mine, and Kenny was on the show, and Kenny said, well, you know, Coach, if I hadn't been hurt, we wouldn't have lost the game. We would have beat Dunbar. And Skip and Tim heard it, and Tim said, man, you got to get us on the show. The first thing Skip said, you know, jokingly, hey, Coach, you tell Kenny Carr I'm gonna punch him in his face talking that trash.
And look, Coach, he made that statement about had he to play. Well, I felt the same way. If Dip had got his toe cut off, we'd have beat him out Morgan again. That's how I feel.
Wow. Well, look, guys, we got about 3 minutes left. Great interview. I've enjoyed this. I want you to each to take a minute. We call it parting shots. Say what you want to say to leave our listeners with some words of wisdom. First, you, Skip Wise.
Well, I'd just like to say that, you know, through it all, through all the years of the pain and the pleasure, I'm still around, I'm still available, I'm still here.
Amen.
And that, you know, patience will always be a virtue in situations with athletes. You have to have patience. You have to have it.
And then, by the way, my brother, Bruce Williams, who we grew up together, he moved to Baltimore. Matter of fact, he was deputy mayor of Baltimore last year, told me to tell you guys hello. All right, Tim Green.
Yeah, Coach, I would say to the younger guys in society, you know your history. You know your history, and know that history was set before you, and history is going to keep being made during your time and after you. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times we get too ahead and thinking that we know everything, and until we get educated on, a lot of cats, especially here in Baltimore, they don't even know their history. You know. And it's sad because, you know, it's right there for them. It's not like that they can't walk up to a Skip Wise and ask him a question, you know, ask him some things that, you know, maybe I don't want that to happen to me. And people here, you know, still love him to death, man, even 50 years later. So he has a lot that if the average kid want to know how to be successful, they should want to reach out to a guy like him, man.
Fantastic. Hey, guys, this has been, I've been doing sports talk radio now for over 25 years, but I cannot think of a better show, a more informative, enjoyable show than this. Skip, thank you so much. Timmy, always a pleasure talking with you guys.
Yes,
and,
sir.
When this pandemic is over, you name the place. Let's get together, break some bread, tell some lies.
We got to do it, Coach. Okay. We got to get to D.C. We got to get to D.C. and Maryland together, Coach. We got to
do it.
We got to do it.
All right, guys.
Thank you so much, Coach.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
And folks, I know you enjoyed this one. This was special. Skip Wise and Timmy Green in the Coach's Corner. Well, stay with us. Up next week, we've got a lineup for you. Hall of Fame sports writer David Aldridge will be with us. And, boy, to be determined, we have some big names lined up for you, so stay with us. But as always, I want to thank our sponsors, Horton's Funeral Service. They're located 600 Kennedy Street Northwest. Give them a call, 202-829-9000. And Dr. Edward T. Buford, one of the finest dentists in the D.C. area, 202-667-8818. And for all of the shows, you can pull them up, past shows, you can pull them up. Just go to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. And as always, Rick Hampton, thank you so much for making this show possible. Well, folks, hope you enjoyed today's show. Next week we'll do even better. But until then, make good decisions, because life is hard, but it's even harder when you're stupid. Rick!